Cunha.
Welcome to Expat Hoops, the podcast where we talk to basketball players who have played professionally overseas. Today we talk to John Arledge, who played three seasons for George Mason University before transferring to Old Dominion. He began his career in Switzerland in 2015 and has played in Italy, Latvia, France, and Greece.
As a quick reminder to help us grow this podcast, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and hit the bell so you'll be notified every time we have new content. Now, if you'll join Tony and I in welcoming John Arledge to Expat Hoops. Welcome, John.
Thanks for having me.
I wanted to talk about your time at George Mason. You played most of three seasons, and the end of the fourth season, you ended up transferring to Old Dominion after that, but we had a couple of questions from a listener that I wanted to get to right off the top. Friend of the pod, Petey Buckets. You played during that time period for two different coaches. You were recruited by Jim Larrañaga. You played for him, and you played for Paul Hewitt again at the end. Is there any insight you have to the different approaches to their style to the game that you think you could expand upon?
Coach L, he never stopped learning. I mean, like, he was a student of the game every day. Like, he's never not learning something or watching something. He's paying attention to all the little minute things that you're doing on the court, and if you're on the side, whatever. Like, he's watching everything. And I know a lot of the players who's been under Coach L or can recall this in practices or whatever. When he's watching something, watching a play or whatever, he's shaking his head like back and forth nonstop. It's like he's like reading everything at once, like a mad scientist. Is wicked, you know. But Coach L, he was a great coach, I would say, for real. Great guy, very, very knowledgeable. And then we got Paul Hewitt. He's very hard-nosed coach. He wanted the best. He wanted to try to pull the best out of every player. And he was a fast, up and down, aggressive mindset, in your face type of coach. And that's how he wants to play. So, you know, you got the tactical guy, and then you got the guy who's just wants to just be in your face at all times, you know. So those are the two differences for me.
What ultimately led to your decision to transfer?
That's a story of its own, man. Well, leading up to my senior year, I was in a car accident and I was injured. So I was suffering from back spasms, like really bad back spasms. And they were debilitating. Like, I couldn't walk. It was hard to breathe, sleep, eat, everything. So leading up, I was doing all the therapy and all the chiropractic treatments, and it just wasn't getting better. So the doctors, it was just like, well, with this type of injury, you don't have a date really for your back to heal. And, you know, time just went on, and I tried to fight through it through preseason, and it was really difficult. We played our first game, and I tried to play, and after the game, I couldn't move. So then I asked for a red shirt for that season. In the midst of me asking for the red shirt, I guess, I don't know, messages or something got misconstrued. And I guess they felt, with the rules with going into your fifth year, you have the option to stay or leave. So I guess they thought that I wanted to leave or whatever, but it didn't seem like they gave me that option when I asked for a red shirt. And that was that. So, you know, I was on my way out
Interesting. And so you are, like you said, you're on your way out. At that point in time, you know, you'd play against ODU six times as a conference rival, ended up transferring there. But I guess my first part of my question would be, what schools were you looking at? Which ones were you hearing from at that particular time? And, you know, did familiarity with ODU eventually have anything to do with your decision to wind up going there? Or was it mostly based off of like the coaching staff and feeling comfortable there?
Had quite a few schools wanted me to come. I think I took a visit to Boston College and Eastern Michigan, I think. I know Western Kentucky. I can't remember all the other schools.
Yeah, it's going back a little ways. So
it was a good list. It was a good list. But for me, ODU, I picked ODU because my familiarity with Coach Jeff Jones, and his coaching staff, Coach Barrett, and all of us. I've known them, or we've had like a mutual connection, and I've known them since I was in high school. So. We just already had that connection with them.
And you played for not one, but two Terry Holland disciples, with Jim Larrañaga being a former assistant on his staff and Jeff Jones actually playing for him and coaching for him for a bit. So that's pretty interesting too. Just a little fun fact there. So your familiarity with that, you had a pretty good year with ODU. You're going through your healed mostly by that point at ODU, correct? You're in good shape. I know you.
I stopped having back spasms. It was around like November.
Wow, that's a long time.
It was no. So I had my accident. I can't remember the month in the summer. And then, we played our first game, I think, around like October. Mm-hmm. And then my spasms stopped around like November.
Okay. So it was the year that you were looking for the red shirt.
So like, I was actually asking them for time just to rest and just relax and let my back heal. But it's how college is, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. It worked out for us all.
Yeah. And so you play a good year. You finish up at Old Dominion. At what point in this whole process that you're going through college, did you end up deciding to go pro? When did you think that was something that you wanted to do and something that you thought was going to be an option for you?
I always wanted to play pro. I started out as a football player. I wanted to be a professional football player. And then I started playing basketball. So it just switched over and I wanted to be a professional basketball player. I felt like my game fit the pro game better than the tactical college traditional way it was when I was playing. Now it's much different.
Yeah, but I want to say, like, looking back on your freshman year, you didn't really play a lot, which obviously I know that some of that is depth of the team. The teams on Mason at that particular time were really loaded, but
yeah. Also, Larrañaga didn't really play a lot of freshmen.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's sort of like one of those things where there's probably a learning curve to it. So you pretty much are gone 1 year at that point. And so that's probably something, especially as a big, that probably was a little bit of a transition as well, right?
Yeah, because like I said, Coach L, he's like a mad scientist when it comes to basketball. And you got to be very intelligent to play under him. And most freshmen who come in are not that experienced to play under Coach L and at his level of acceptance. So that's just it comes with it, just the experience, you know, coming in as a freshman and his level of acceptance that he wants to see on the floor with his name on it, you know. So it's understood.
Yeah. So you're at Old Dominion at that point in time, you're finishing up, and you know, you thought that you might want to go pro, but in terms of actually putting it into execution, what was the process like for you trying to find an agent? Was that something that you were able to go to the coaching staff at Old Dominion, or was that something that you just kind of found on your own as you were looking to go professional?
So all my coaches who I played for, they know how skilled I am, and was and is, whatever. But so they knew where my game fit most. And over the summers, I would train with a bunch of pros. So their agents would be in and out of the gym. So they already seen what I can do in my game. And how I hold myself against the caliber of players who I was training with. And so when I was done and I was ready to make that decision, I had opportunities of agents already willing to work with me because they knew what I can do. Regardless of what was going on in college, they knew that I was skilled enough to compete at that level. So I signed with one agent, and I fired him in like a couple weeks.
That's a common experience with
you. Yeah, that's the business. That's the business. Mm-hmm. When you're trying to figure it out, and even when you're going through the whole career, like I have friends now who've probably played 4 years and have had seven agents. You know, so I fired my first agent very quick. He was really green in like the basketball realm. He was on the entertainment side.
Oh, interesting.
He didn't really have the connection. So I fired him. And then I had another guy who seen me through high school and college and in the summers and whatnot. And I was with him my first year. Yeah, my first year, but my first season, I ended up having to fire him too because I felt like the agreement we had wasn't fulfilled. And I got a new agent, and I've been with that agent ever since. So I've been playing six years now, and I've been with the same agent.
Yeah, and I know that you started off in Switzerland. That's one that I don't think that we've had a lot of people that have played in that league specifically, and definitely not to start. So what was it like starting off in Switzerland? Obviously, on the court, you did really well. I mean, looking at the stats, it's like 16, average of 16 and a half points, 7.2 rebounds for the season, the assists thrown in there in the mix. So obviously, on the court, did really well. But take us through what the first year was like in terms of adjusting to Switzerland and getting over there.
It was rough, man. It was rough. when it comes to being a professional basketball player, I try not to sugarcoat because it's not for everybody. And for those who may see this, you know, like they need to know what they might be getting themselves into, you know. So I mean, I went into that situation. I competed in a summer exposure camp in Las Vegas, and I was coming off of an injury. So I got injured in ODU in the playoffs, in the conference tournament. I got injured, and I was playing through it or whatever. So then I was recovering and preparing for this summer exposure thing, Worldwide Invitational in Vegas. And there was a draft for it. You had to get invited to even get drafted. And then there was no guarantee that you'd even get drafted. So I got picked, I'm thinking like the last round, which was like the third round. And there was a lot of scouts there, a lot of scouts, a lot of agents. And it was during the same time as the NBA Summer League. So there's a lot of people in town. And I managed to come out of there in first team. So that really put my name in a lot of mouths. And me being green and naive to everything, you know, I ended up signing my first deal in Switzerland for like 1500. And mind you, 1500 a month. The currency in Switzerland is the Swiss franc. And the equivalent to that, to the dollar, is like three times more. Like you're like $10 is like, no, $30 is like 10 Swiss francs.
Mm-hmm. You know, cost of living is very high.
It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I got there like 235 pounds, left there 209.
Oh, you know, goodness.
It was a struggle,
man.
And, but I was averaging like 19 points and like 9 rebounds. And, I was the youngest in the top 3 in scoring, youngest in the top 3 in rebounding. And, I was dominating it. And then a lot of, corrupt things started happening, you know, like I woke up one morning, my tire was busted with a little, and then somebody like drew a little smiley face on the back of my car so that I was late for practice. And then I'm late for practice. So then they're like, all right, we're going to fine you. We're going to do that. I'm like, whoa, what is going on? Somebody popped my tire, you know, like, why are y'all talking about, y'all want to fine me, this, that, and the third. So a whole bunch of other stuff was going on. And, they ended up trying to take the ball out of my hands, and that's when my averages started going down. There's a lot of things that happen, you know, a lot of things that you go through out there in Europe, and you just got to be able to just stick through it. You know, you just got to be able to stick through it. You got to stay tall, stay prayed up, stay focused on what the goal is, because where you're at right at that moment, it's temporary. It's you're not there. You're not going to be there every year, you know? So you just gotta fight through it when you're in a tough situation. You know, you're going to get homesick. You may go through your bumpy roads where you do certain things to get by or whatever, but just don't do anything that's going to jeopardize your career, and just stay focused and fight through it, because you can end up victorious at the end. Nuts.
It sounds like that was quite a struggle, especially with the the weight loss part, which I'm assuming you didn't have much money to, you know, make ends meet. Didn't eat as much as you needed to eat, even as a 19-year-old. But you ended up in Italy's second league for a couple of seasons. First for Latina Basket, then for Piacenza. Can you tell us about your experience in Italy and how that was hopefully better for you?
Yeah. So that's my agent now. He's Italian, Mario Scotti. So he's based in Italy, Northern Italy. And he got me those two jobs coming out of Switzerland. It's not often that people get that type of job coming out of Switzerland. You know, at that time, people in the second league in Italy are making just as much or more than people in the first league. So, I got there and I'm like, all right, finally, like, you know, like I went from getting 1500 a month. Now I'm out here sitting, I think I'm rich. I got 5,000 a month now. I'm good. I'm good now. But no, it's that jump from my first year to my second year, that was major for me, you know, and I was very excited to show what I can do in that season. I think I did a really good job in that season.
Hi, I'm Natalie Butler, and you're listening to Expat Hoops. Subscribe to their YouTube channel and listen to their other interviews on the By George Podcasting Network.
Good. So during your 2-year stint in Italy, what was the decision like? I guess, you know, you played the first season. Were you hearing from other clubs in other countries at that point? Going into your second season in Italy, or were you just make the decision, I want to stay in Italy?
Yeah, I had some offers. Germany and Eastern Europe. I had some offers after my first year, but the offer in Italy that I got for the second year was a good situation, and I needed to take it. It was better than all the other ones I had.
So. And especially after coming off the Switzerland experience, I'm sure you probably wanted to have some stability and not only make the money, but also to be able to stay there and say that, you know, this is what I'm used to, and basically have 2 years of some
and
level.
It's like you get another year to be in Italy. It's like how could you pass that up?
Well, that's actually kind of where I was going too, is like, you know, during your first 3 years, probably not so much in Switzerland, but with Italy, what were some of the things that you would do off the court in terms of you get to travel, things like that?
Yeah. So, you know, Italy has tons of places you can go. Like, you would never be like Rome and Milan and Venice. Those aren't just the only places. Like, there are so many other places you can go in Italy, and you'll come up to a small village or town or whatever and get some amazing food. But when I was in Latina, Rome was my spot. It was like a 30-minute train ride. And I just go to Rome and get have a nice meal, or walk around, have some gelato, you know. And then I went to Piacenza, which is northern, and that was like another 30-minute train ride to Milan, you know. So now I got Milan. Now I'm experiencing the northern side of Milan, and then you got Cremona, where my agent is, and you got a lot of Como, Lake Como.
Oh yeah.
Yep. So you got a lot of places over there in the north side, and then you got Rome on the south, mid south side, which is the pasta, the food, the cooking in the southern Italy is amazing.
Yeah, there's Stanley Tucci has a whole show about Italian food on CNN. I'm sure that you could probably have your own show if you wanted.
Man, I love pasta. That's my favorite food. And then put me in Italy, I'm in heaven.
Well, you definitely got yourself back in shape after the skinny in Switzerland. That's for sure. You ate just fine.
yeah, for sure. Made up for all the meals missed.
So you ended up in Latvia the following season. Fowler and Campbell has also played for this particular club. I'm going to butcher this. It looks like Ventspils, but I know that it can't be right.
It's as simple as it is spelled.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Ventspils it is. Yeah. All right. So in Ventspils, what was your experience in Latvia like? You left Italy. I'm sure the weather wasn't quite as good, but perhaps there are some positives that you could glean from that.
Yeah. It was Champions League.
That helps.
So that's why I really jumped for that one. Latvia is different, you know. When the sun starts going down and it's dark at 4 p.m.
Sun starts going down and it just doesn't come back up again for months.
Yeah, it's dark at 4 and you could try to take a nap and now your brain's all messed up and you think you late. You think you'd have missed the whole day. Like, whoo, I had many moments where I thought I'd miss practices, I missed games. I thought I'd devoured everything. Like, man, because that sun, that'll mess you up. But man, Latvia was fun, man. It was fun. It was a small town, really small. In Ventspils, and it wasn't really much to do. You know, everyone knows everyone. There's like one in elementary school, one was one, you know, and the main city, Riga, is 2 hours away. No ways around it. It's 2 hours every time. that's where all, that's the big city, that's where the airport, that's where everything is. And then my city was just, my town, just, you know, it was just Europe, it was nothing there. But we had a great time. We had, I think, about four Americans, and we made it as good as we can, you know. So that's one thing you gotta hope you can have a good group of Americans who you can latch on to. If you don't got your wife there, luckily I have my wife there too. So that's also a plus for me.
What was it like playing in Latvia? What was the atmosphere like in a small town like that?
Very, very easygoing, very nice. You know,
no flares being shot at you, you know, nothing like that.
No. Very easy basketball, easy time. They're just there for just the entertainment, you know. And it's not like Greece or like the Middle East, like Greece and Israel and Turkey and around there, it gets a little wild. It gets a little wild. But the fans are great. The fans are great, especially when we have our rival games against like Riga. The fans are great. I will say that.
So after Latvia, you wind up in France's top league, another club that's popped up for some of our past guests. I am also probably going to butcher it, but it's Cholet?
Cholet, yeah.
All right, I got it. So what was the experience like in France's top league playing for them?
Amazing time, man. Amazing time. You know, going from having a great season that I had in the Champions League, in my first year in the Champions League, and then coming into playing in Jeep Elite, that's a big jump for me. And I did well. We had a great group of guys, Pete, Jock, and Chris, and Jay, and Mike Stockton. Sure, I'm forgetting somebody. I don't know. I think I'm forgetting somebody. We had a great group. We had a really, really good group, and we had friendships forever, I would say, and we did a really good job. We were supposed to finish last, man. We were supposed to finish last, and we managed to finish in the top four, I think, in the top four. And then they got the bid to play in the Champions League the next season, this past season that just passed. So that was really good and really big for me that I felt proud of.
And you're also finding yourself in France as well. So off the floor, I mean, we've heard from other people as well, the treatment in France. So that's why I feel like I can ask this question too, that you're not really exactly suffering off the floor either. So this is probably a little bit better of a trip for you as well. Where did you get to see the sights in France essentially?
Yeah. I seen Paris. I did not get to go to Monaco though, man. COVID ruined that. COVID ruined our trip to Monaco, but I've seen quite a bit of France, you know, east side, Strasbourg, north in Gravelines, Dunkirk. That's a small town right there. Dunkirk and Gravelines, that's that thing. Ooh. That's like, it reminded me of Switzerland. And then my town in Switzerland, I think it was a village. We had like 1,200 people.
Oh, wow.
In the population. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And everything closed at 6:00. In Switzerland, nothing was open on Sundays. Yeah, that was rough. But France was amazing, man. We had a great time. Paris is as beautiful as it is hyped up to be.
Yeah, it lives up to its reputation.
Yeah, but the food, I will say, is overhyped.
Shots fired.
Well, there is actually, I don't know, I can't remember, I saw an article a few years ago about how like there's a downturn in like French cuisine, and that like they're even, I want to say that like even in Paris a lot of the stuff is actually being like pre-made and it's not as fresh as it used to be, so that mm-hmm. might be also in line with the timeline for you as well. I don't know what the reason was, but
I will say that they hold the crown on the pastries.
Well, yeah.
They got that. That's cool. They take the pastries, but the food, I know they be trying to say the French cuisine is that, but Italians got them beat for sure. I think the Greeks got them beat too.
Oh.
That isn't surprising to me.
All right.
I love Greek food, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not surprising, but, you know, if we get some pod listeners from Europe, they might have some angry emails they're sending us.
Send it to you guys, though.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to have to deal with the fallout from that. So you played this past season in Greece, correct?
Yeah, I did.
So what was, first of all, let's talk about what COVID did in the time in between seasons for you.
Other than ruining your trip.
Other than ruining your trip, how that messed things up for you. Yeah, which would have been nice.
Sorry to go back. I forgot to mention, when I was in Cholet, we made it to the French Cup, and we was in Disneyland. We played our tournament in Disneyland.
That's cool.
And remember, we were supposed to finish last.
Yeah, that's quite an accomplishment for a team to make the cup final. That's supposed to finish last in the division, that's for sure.
Yeah. But Greece, you were saying?
Yeah. So tell us how COVID affected the past season for you, and you know how the season went after that.
Yeah. I'm sure I'm not the only one.
Far from it.
Yeah. You know, as far as preparing and training for the next season, it was very, very difficult and different trying to navigate and figure it out, you know, like, because you can't go into the gyms no more. You can't trainers probably don't want to train you because they want to be safe, and maybe the players want to be safe. So training was very, very it affected my approach in the season for sure, because I even tried to I tried to maneuver around the training and join the Canadian Basketball League in the summer, last summer. And I feel like that was a mistake also. I feel like I would have been better off running outside at home than going there, because when I went there, I had to sit for 2 weeks for quarantine. And we leave in like a month and a half to go play in Europe, you know, like sitting these 2 weeks is not going to help me. It's going to hurt, you know? So we ended up making it through, and I went to Greece, and we played our first Champions League game. I sprained my ankle very bad. I had a good preseason. Mind you, had a really good preseason. We had a really good team. We beat Panathinaikos in the preseason tournament to go into the championship to play Prometheus. So we had a really good team. So I sprained my ankle, and I'm in the midst of recovering, and things started to go downhill from there for me, and that's where I'm at now.
I know you said, as we asked you where you were just before the pod, that you said you were back in your hometown in Silver Spring right now. So what happened? How did you end up back here after your ankle got sprained?
So I sprained my ankle and suffered a bone bruise on my ankle. In the midst of me recovering, my agent, the team, they wanted to go a different route. They wanted to go with a sharpshooter at the four position. That was their reasoning behind it.
Stretch four, basically.
I'm a stretch four. They wanted someone to come off the bench and just stand in the corner and shoot threes. I'm not that guy. I can shoot threes. I can do everything you need. But I'm just not comfortable with just coming off the bench and you just want me to just shoot threes. I can't do it. So they wanted to go a different direction, which was fine. All right, I'm injured, so now I can't leave right now. I have to get healthy. So I'm trying to get healthy, and I'm preparing to leave and maybe hopefully sign with another team. My dad comes down, he calls me, he tells me he has cancer. they just found he passed out in the kitchen, and ambulance came, and they did some tests and found out he has multiple myeloma. So then that's a shock for me. And then I strained my calf in midst of me getting in shape and whatnot, getting ready to prepare to go to another team. I strained my calf, and then my dad is going through his procedures and whatnot, and I'm going back and forth with him. Like, I don't know. I think I'm going to try to get through it. You know, I think I got like a month until my calf is good, and then I can – my calf is good, and then I can go play again. And then he calls, like, I think a couple of weeks later in, like, January, and he's like – he's in the hospital now with COVID. So now it's like, all right, he got multiple myeloma, which attacks the immune system. And now he has COVID, which attacks the respiratory system, you know, and among other things. So I had to come home. It was like, it was a lot of stress building up for me. So I had to come home. He made it through. Wow. Luckily, it wasn't the other way around, because when they found out that he had the myeloma, they had already started the chemo and the brain, the blood transfusions and this, that, and all the things that they need to do. So when he got COVID, they was already giving him new blood, and the new blood is going to help with his immune system. And that helped fight the COVID. So he was lucky on that point, because if it was the other way around, they would have been too scared to do the treatments and whatnot, and their COVID would have just took over.
So, well, it's for quite fortunate for you then.
Yeah.
So I had to risk this season to come home with, it was injuries, and then my dad getting sick. So it was necessary for me to just come home. Mm-hmm. And I've been home since February just training. And I feel like it's been a blessing for me. Getting bigger, getting stronger, jumping higher, games getting better. Everything is better. So this next season is going to be better. Much, much better. It's going to be. I can't even talk about it. I'm just waiting for it. Ready.
I mean, can't have a much better segue and ending for that than of our main part of our interview, I think.
Yeah. That was former George Mason and Old Dominion basketball player John Arledge telling us about his ongoing career playing in Europe. A reminder, you can find us all over social media on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter under Expat Hoops. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, where we'll release exclusive content from each podcast so you don't miss a thing. Also, be sure to hit up our Patreon and give us a contribution if you like what you hear, so we can keep giving you the best. For Tony Budney, I'm Andy Hoverman. Tune in next time on Expat Hoops.